the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Series podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site that covers your Arizona Cardinals. And with me for our second show of the week and our first and only preview show of the week is Seth Cox, my co-host from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And it's time to talk Cardinals Seahawks. And it feels like we just barely did this the other day, well, because we literally did. That's why we don't need to get Cole Musgrove back on, because we do know about the Seahawks. They beat the Cardinals 16-6 two games ago, held the Cardinals to 298 total yards, although the Cardinals did outgain the Seahawks. The Cardinals played a pretty good defensive end game themselves, but struggled in a lot of ways, Seth. Before we get started, we've got to congratulate Trey McBride for being named the Cardinals Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee. That's cool, because he's been the best player on the field for the Cardinals, and now he's getting the nod for what he's done off the field, and that's pretty cool, especially for a player as young as Trey, in my opinion.
Yeah, he looks like he's developing into the all-around star that, you know, it's just fun to watch mature and grow into positions grow into a dominant player, but a better man. And that's something that, you know, we've been lucky enough to see with some guys over the years, obviously Fitz being the main one, but Calais Campbell's another one that comes to mind. Similar draft range, right? Kind of a slow, and I know Calais's was more of who was in front of him, but a slow start to their careers in year one. And for Calais, I think it was year three. No, year two, he really broke out. And then Calais becomes probably, I mean, right around a Hall of Famer.
With the production, with the longevity, yeah, it's going to be hard to keep him out, I think.
Yeah.
And had he left, the career that he had with the Cardinals was good. It wasn't Hall of Fame level, but then he took it to another level when he played for Jacksonville and then Baltimore.
Yeah, and you look at it, I mean, you mentioned it, 56 and a half sacks in 9 years. I mean, that's great, right? 7 sacks a year. That's a fantastic little, or sorry, 6 sacks a year. That's a fantastic career for a guy the way they used him. And then you look at it, I mean, he did nothing really his rookie year. And so, you know, you look at Trey now in year three, he's, you know, transformed into just a mega star, you know, the best tight end the Cardinals have had in Arizona history. Not necessarily franchise history, but
it's easy to say because the Cardinals have been, but that doesn't diminish the fact that he's also, you might look at the young tight ends and argue, you could argue that he's the best young tight end out there. You've got Brock Bowers out there. You've got Sam LaPorta out there. But, you know, McBride really does all of it. You know, he's going to reach, staying healthy, he's gonna be George Kittle type impact here very quickly.
Yeah,
like,
and so
it's Travis Kelce, like he's like the best, but you don't see him doing all the tight end things as much.
Yeah,
Kittle does all of it. Mark Andrews does all of it, and Trey McBride does all of it. He's really turned into a fantastic player, and he is a joy to watch. And the add to the fact that now he's adding that off the field resume, that bodes really well. It's the type of player that the Cardinals will not likely let go, and will be paid very handsomely here in the next year or two.
Yeah, so you just look at it. It's, you know, it's a great thing to see. Probably one of Steve Keim's 5 best draft picks when it's all said and done, right? And
it was the one we're like, why?
Yeah. And so we'll see how it all turns out in the end. Like you said, we got years and years left to go on that, which is great, obviously, to see and things of that nature. But, you know, to see him where he's at and the growth he in the player that he's become is just a lot of fun. And you know, now you get to enjoy him for what he is, which is, you know, just a, quite frankly, just a great player, great person, and continue to see him grow into that like leadership role on and off the field and in the community and all of that, which is, you know, which ends up being what defines who these guys are, right? Like, part of the reason Fitz always endeared himself was the work he put in. You know, Calais became a pillar of the community as well. So these guys, you know, once they get a chance to really put their mark on the community, it's important. And you know, Trey's being able to do that now is really impressive. And I'm just excited to see the growth and the continued growth for this guy, because he's a fun player to watch, man. And he's a fiery competitor. He's a very talented player. And now, you know, you've got this to go along with everything else. You know, it's just a lot of fun.
It is. So let's go ahead and get started talking about Seahawks Cardinals. Now, we don't need to go in depth as to what the Seahawks have been this season. We can note that their season started. They've been a roller coaster of a team, winning three straight off the bat, losing five out of the next seven, and now since coming off their bye week, have won three straight games, and that includes two division games. They beat the 49ers, they beat the Cardinals, and then they came back and beat the Jets. I guess, what do we know now about
probably
the Seahawks that we didn't before?
Probably ended the Aaron Rodgers era in New York as well. I mean, you look at it, the reality is, and you kind of hit on it, coming out of their OT loss to the Rams, right? And they started to find something. So it's always tough when you look at things and you go, okay, you blow out the Falcons. The Falcons have proven to be, you know, a team eerily similar to the Cardinals, and that they are talented but hugely flawed, right? And
yes,
that's where that is. And so you look at that game, that 34-14 win in week seven, gets them to 4-3, and you go, I mean, it's not impressive. And then on the flip side, you don't give too much credence at the same time to getting blown out by Buffalo, because Buffalo is maybe the best team in the NFL. And so, you know, you kind of look at those two games and you go, okay. And then you get that Los Angeles game, and Los Angeles put up a ton of yards. They came back, that, you know, all of that stuff. But for a half, the Seahawks defense really looked like they had figured it out, right? And they looked really, really good. And you mentioned that. And then they come back and they beat the 49ers, hold them 17 points. Then they come out and beat the Cardinals, hold them 6 points. And then they come out and beat the Jets. And yeah, the Jets score 21. But, you know, you look at it and you go, okay.
It was two offensive touchdowns.
Right. And so you look at it and you go, okay, this seems pretty good. And so, you know, it's just, as this has gone, you've watched this team kind of find their way defensively and just find a way to do enough offensively. We talked about Geno Smith. You know, it's ironic. Maybe it's not the best term, but maybe it is. I mean, it's ironic that we're so, and using the royal we, especially the fan base, you know, but we're so hard on Kyler, right, and things of that nature. And you know, you and I have said he needs to play better. There's zero doubt about that. But, you know, you look at what Geno Smith has done in those that three-game win streak. He has two touchdowns and two interceptions.
I mean, yeah, that's one thing that's changed. And when the Cardinals lost to the Seahawks, and when I talked about the confidence level in the Cardinals moving forward and winning the division, it dropped to 60%. Now it's dropped to kind of a toss up. But that was my fear, was that Seattle's defense might have found something, and if we look at the last three games, yes, they seem to have found something, although their offense has not been impressive at all. The last three games, the Seahawks have not allowed 300 yards of offense to a team. They have forced turnout. They've now had takeaways in six straight games, although they continue to turn the ball over at a high rate. They've got turnovers in all but two games, turned the ball over twice against the Jets. But if you look at also, they are stopping the run lately. 49 yards allowed to the Cardinals, 89 yards allowed to the Jets, 68 yards allowed to the Rams. So they've held opponents in three of the last four games to under 100 yards rushing, which is that's a worry. But at the same time, their offense has not reached 300 yards in their last three games. And so it is a dichotomy of an offense that is, or maybe it is the identity that as the defense is getting better, the offense is trying to be more careful, only they're not quite as careful.
Well, and yeah, I mean, I think that's a lot of it, Jess. They're just, you know, teams go in runs, and we understand that as Cardinals fans. We talked about this the other night. Unless you have an elite coach or an elite quarterback, it's really, really tough to it's really, really tough to sustain success, whether it's from, you know, season to season or even week to week, right? And when you look at what the Cardinals are doing and what the Cardinals have done, the play of Kyler and the coaching of Jonathan Gannon has shown that, you know, Kyler is a good enough quarterback to win games, but sometimes he's not good enough to overcome coaching decisions. And then on the flip side, you know, Kyler's good enough not to lose a game, but he may not be able to win you a game, if that makes sense, right? And so when you look at it from that perspective and you look at kind of how this is going, you're seeing that all kind of play out. And you know, quite frankly, this has become one of those situations where you watch the Seahawks and they're a good team. I don't want to take anything away from them, but they hung around in the early portion of the season based on their offensive success, right? You mentioned it, a couple of these wins with over, you know, 350 yards of offense. And then since then, it's just about doing enough offensively to not screw it up for what has become a good defense. And that is the ebbs and flows of the NFL. And we mentioned it, you know, you take out that first Broncos game where it was a rookie first time starter, Bo Nix, who looked putrid. And then the first game against the Dolphins, where the Dolphins were playing in Seattle, I think it was a Sunday afternoon game, and with Skylar Thompson at quarterback, right? And you're like, yes. Yeah, this is a joke, and it was, and you know, those were really the only two impressive defensive performances we saw outside of that Atlanta game. But even that Atlanta game was weird, right? 369 total yards of offense for Atlanta.
Atlanta ran for over 150 yards. That game was weird. It was because the three turnovers and that's the one of two games that the Seahawks didn't turn the ball over.
Right. And so you look at all of that and you say, this is a team that found its footing defensively, and it's really taken the pressure off the offense. And that's why they probably have gotten better, because their defense is so good that you don't need to worry about the offense. Just do enough to not lose us a game, and that's where it's at. And you know, we talked about that with the Cardinals last week, right? Like, the difference right now between the Seattle defense and the Cardinals defense is, in that situation, the Seattle defense probably gets a stop on that last drive.
Yeah.
Whereas the Cardinals defense, you know, they've done good, but they haven't been able to maintain four quarters of excellence. And that's kind of where you see it happen. So, you know, they're in a good spot. they've got obviously the right guy in Mike McDonald, right? Not McDaniel, Mike McDonald. I always got to think about that. And then, you know, they did a nice job of getting Geno Smith kind of under contract and not having to worry about it, even though he's not, you know, by any means a great player. He's a good, I mean, again, you look at the numbers and you'd be like, if that was the Cardinals quarterback, we'd be like, oh, we got to, you know, we're seeing a lot of fans be like, oh, this isn't good enough. But, you know, to other people, it's fine. And so it's just, it's an interesting dichotomy of the whole situation. But, you know, the fact that they found their defense again is definitely frustrating as a Cardinals fan, right? You go from the Pete Carroll years to now the Mike McDonald years. And so you're saying to yourself, oh, crap, they're not going to do this again, right? And so we'll wait and see. I mean, this game is a big one because if the Cardinals can find a way to win this game, like you said, they end up being in first place in the NFC West. And they kind of control their own destiny at that point. And they put the onus on a Seattle team that's got, even though they're at home, they have two really, really tough games coming up after the Cardinals game that could really determine the outcome of the season before they get two road games that are probably winnable.
Yeah. And, you know, when it comes to Seattle, I think if we could point to one thing or one player, it has been the play of Leonard Williams the last 2 weeks. He was having a fairly just okay year. The last 2 weeks, I do not know what has gotten into that man, but wow. He completely wrecked the Cardinals. It single-handedly wrecked the Cardinals offensive line in that game, and it continued against the Jets. So over his last two games, 4.5 sacks, 10 total tackles, 6 tackles for loss, 6 quarterback hits, a pass breakup, 2 pass breakups, a pass breakup, and then an interception that he ran 92 yards for the touchdown. I will say this. There is no excuse for a 300-pound man to run over 90 yards for a touchdown. I will say this. You know what happened on that play against the Jets? I saw zero skill players chasing him. I don't know how that happened, but I'm not going to take anything away from Leonard Williams. That shouldn't happen, but Leonard Williams has been the catalyst, I believe. I don't know if it's since the bye, because he's had a nagging foot injury that he sat out of practice yesterday, that maybe had been slowing him and it's getting better. But his play, and when we talk about the matchups, will be critical. But I think, you know, he is the biggest catalyst for what's been going on, because if we look at the last couple of weeks, the sacks have come almost all from Leonard Williams. Remember, we were talking about Derek Hall had his 6 sacks when he coming into play. He still has 6 sacks. I believe, didn't Boye Mafe have a sack against the Cardinals? But other than that, there wasn't much in the way of that. And it was Leonard Williams that has kind of done that. And so got to do a better job against that guy, because that game, the Cardinals offensive line looked absolutely atrocious.
They did, and they have to come back. They have to come back with something more this week. And if they don't, they're going to find themselves under 500, which is, you know, kind of sad after what we had seen previously, right? Like, they had been playing extremely well and doing a good job, and now all of a sudden they are about to be under 500 again and potentially, you know, not control their own destiny. And then, you know, we talked about it. The playoffs would be the icing on a good season cake, but to see them lose it like they have,
to see them fall apart. after where they were at would be highly disappointing. It would just be big picture. You'd be like, okay, but.
Right. And so like, that's kind of the biggest thing with this is can they find a way to compete with a Seattle defense that seems to just be good enough?
Yeah. Coming up next on the Rise of Sirius podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk and Web, let's move on and talk about the matchup. What are the keys for the Cardinals this time around? What matchups are we watching? There's definitely one we already know. That's coming up next on Rise of Sirius. Back on the Rise of Sirius podcast, Best Hour of Cardinals Talk on the Web, talking with Seth Cox, previewing Cardinals Seahawks. We look at the matchups, we look at the keys, and I think we can go no further than two things right off the bat. One is got to contain Leonard Williams, and two, got to get more out of the running game than they did in week 12. Week 12.
Yeah, and you know that'll be something that we'll have to watch, right? Like, this team is going to have to lean on what is their strength, which is the running game. And even last week we talked about it a little bit, right? Like, the loss to Minnesota, the running game numbers, and again, Minnesota's defense number one and against the rush in the NFL, like we understand that. So but even those numbers were a little skewed, right? Like, you look at them and go, a lot of that was Kyler. And so it makes it a little more imperative this week that they get these guys going and they get more from James Conner, they get more from Trey Benson, they get the same type of game from Kyler, right? And they're able to control the ball more and give the defense those breaks that we talked about, right? Like, the second half, the defense just kind of looked gassed. I mean, and I don't know if that was, you know, based on that they were actually gassed, that we saw Minnesota go to a quicker offense, you know, try to do things quickly in a hurry-up setting, and things of that nature. So controlling the tempo, controlling the game flow, that's something that the Cardinals in their wins have been able to do consistently. So if they're going to continue to do that, or if they want to get back onto the winning ways, obviously that's something that they're going to have to do in this one.
Yes, absolutely. They've got to do that. Here's a note that that's kind of important. And I think we need to get back to it. And we've referenced it in our last show about Murray and the run game. He had a 20-yard run or more in three straight games to open the season. And he's only had that twice since. And now it's been five games in a row without a 20-yard run. Just the threat of what he can do. Now, I will say this, that Seattle defended him quite well in the last one. But, you know, every time we've talked about that, the narrative's been about Kyler's legs. I think it's time to make that a focal point again, especially when he has opportunities to scramble, not just scramble to throw, but take advantage of running lanes to scramble to run and soften up that defense. So I think that's going to be important in this one. He did run a bit, and granted, in that first matchup, didn't he have 40-something? No, he had roughly half. No, that's not right. I'm just making crap up. Kyler had 9 whole yards. Never mind. It was Trey Benson that had 18 of the yards that they had. So they need a better game from James Conner. That doesn't mean that he was bad in that game, but he wasn't impactful. He had a 0% success rate, and that can't happen again. And then you can't, they absolutely cannot let Leonard Williams dominate the game the way he did. So we've got, you know, eyeballs firmly on Tristan Colon, especially, and Evan Brown to play better than they did against him. And Yeah, and then I think it's just offensively, the Cardinals can't expect to win, as we've talked about before. The Seahawks, now, that they allowed 21 points in their win over the Jets. That's the first time a team has scored over 20 points in one of their wins. The Cardinals need to hum offensively. They got to do what they did against Minnesota, but finish drives. Because I don't think the Seattle team is equipped to get back into the type of, you know, high scoring games where they, because they've in all their losses, they've given up 26 or more, as you noted a couple of weeks ago. And so if they get into sort of a track meet while they have the horses to do it, that
their quarterback just hasn't been good enough.
Yeah, that's when Geno will make mistakes. And yeah, so they gotta win the turnover battle in this one. And then defensively, if they play defensively the way they have the last 2 weeks, they will be fine. If the offense, you know, one, does it plays like it did last week. If it plays like it did last week and the defense holds Seattle the way it did 2 weeks ago, the Cardinals will be fine, provided they are not shooting themselves in the red zone. You can't go 1-for-6 in the red zone. You can afford to go 50% in the red zone. And if you do that, if they score 3 touchdowns, and I think this is going to be the case this week, is that Arizona offense is going to look much better for a number of reasons. Now, I am mildly worried about this crowd, because we have seen Seattle fans take over a crowd in Arizona, and I don't want to see that, because that is highly annoying. Highly annoying. But what other matchups do you have your eyes on?
That's the big one. You know, I want to see the continued maturation of Darius Robinson. You know, 8 snaps, not surprising, right? I mean, one, they've been playing well, so we've talked about this with the Jonah Williams situation. And then two, I mean, it's his first game after having literally never played a snap in a regular season game. So all of that, you know, makes sense. But I want to see him and Baron Browning continue to grow, you know, as weapons on this team. And they should have some decent matchups. The Seahawks line isn't great by any means. And I think they can go and push and take advantage of that. I mean, you look what Browning's done in just 3 short games, right? I mean, he's got 5 tackles, tackle for loss, and a quarterback hit already. Like, he's getting after the passer. He's showing why they brought him in. And then Robinson, again, will just continue to grow. And then, obviously, you want to see this line continue to improve with Jonah Williams back in. I thought they played excellent for the most part last week. Couple breakdowns that we weren't overly surprised to see, but, you know, I think a little disappointed to see in that game. But outside of that, like, this is a game where you've mentioned it a couple times. This should be a game where they're able to get things moving. And even though that the Seahawks defense has been playing well, it shouldn't preclude the Cardinals from being able to play at a high level as well.
Correct. Coming up next on the Rest of the Year podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's move on and talk about our picks, predictions, props, and more. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web, talking Cardinals, Seahawks. Time to make our predictions. I feel better about this game.
I want to ask you a question first. Are you surprised that they're favored in this game?
A little bit, but what that says to me is that the public doesn't believe, and the sportsbooks don't believe in Seattle, that what they're doing is a little smoke and mirrory, that they believe in the Cardinals offense. I will say this, though, the money isn't so much on the Cardinals side. 52% of the handle picked the Cardinals on BetMGM to cover, but 57% of the money line bets are on the Seahawks. And then in part, you know, that is in part because the plus 120 odds are on the money line are fairly close. Although we did see the odds shift slightly over the week. Wasn't it a point and a half when the week started, like on Sunday night?
Yeah, and the money line shifted to minus 142. So, I mean, and then on FanDuel, it's a little different. You're seeing the favorite of the Cardinals. I think it's 51-49 right now. So, again, I mean, it's basically a toss-up on either site, right? Like 52-48, 51-49, it's basically a toss-up. Yeah. But the money's really coming in on the under. So I don't know how to take that based on.
You know what's weird? 67% on BetMGM is on the over.
Okay. So I think
that's crazy.
So that what's interesting about that is that wouldn't that kind of be the opposite of what we're talking about?
Like, yes. If the over's hitting, this is a Cardinals win.
Right. And then if the under's hitting, you would assume it's Seahawks win. Again, it's the spread part's a coin flip. I mean, I get that that it is slightly in favor of X, Y, or Z, but you know, it is a coin flip, man. Let's just call it what it is. And so, you know, you look at that. I think the Cardinals cover this one, and I do think that they win this game. I don't think it's gonna be a blowout by any means. It's going to be similar to last week. They'll just be able to finish it out. I think it's going to be 26-20.
I've got slightly higher scoring. I've got it 29-23. That's going to be and that high scoring. I think the Cardinals are going to hit that three touchdown threshold, or I think they will have five or six scoring drives, and that'll be critical. If they do that, that's going to be hard for them to beat. And so with that idea, and maybe that's just wishful thinking, but if the Seahawks are going to continue to play at the level defensively that they are, well, then I think the Cardinals are basically toast for the division anyway. But based on what we've seen from this team, they had a bounce back. They played that Vikings team very well and should have won that game. And even with the mistakes, they should have won that game. And so it feels like that they would be on track to then lock in a little more and, you know, get that win over Seattle. They need it. They need it for a lot of reasons. They got to avoid the head-to-head tiebreak loss to the Seahawks that devastates them in the playoff race. But if they win that third division game, that means they're guaranteed that Seattle will neither have a head-to-head nor a division, because that would be Seattle's third division loss. And so they've already taken care of San Francisco. San Francisco can't beat them in either tiebreak. Then if the Cardinals win this week, the Seahawks can't beat them in any tiebreak. And frankly, the Cardinals have the slightly easier schedule, and it lines them up to they should and need to win the next three games, if we're being perfectly honest. And that's what I'm expecting them to do. I expect them to come out. I think the offense will play well. I think they will protect the football and get into more of a Cardinals game, a track meet, which favors the Cardinals immensely. We might see a couple of big plays from DK Metcalf or Jaxon Smith-Njigba. But I think, I think we got to do this, don't we? We got to say that, you know, in terms of props, we are saying more Trey McBride. The over-under on receiving yards for him is 66.5. You go 75 plus, you got even money. 100 plus, you go to plus 290. I think that one, come on, that's easy. That's easy. Ladder that all the way up, because they're not getting great linebacker play and coverage. So ladder that baby up to 100 receiving yards, don't you think?
Yeah, it should be an interesting one, because you got to assume he's going to be the focal point, right? But they haven't stopped anybody, and nobody's really stopped him recently. So I think that's a good one to have, you know, on. Oh, that's his receptions. Probably should look at that too, though. That's, you know, what is it on BetMGM right now? 100
six and
plus.
A half. For 100 plus, it's plus 290.
Okay, so it's plus 305 on FanDuel. Oh, so slightly better to take him at 10.
Well, then plus at FanDuel, what you're able to do as well is you can ladder more because doesn't do it every 10 yards.
Yeah, yeah. So
MetaGee only does it every 25. So
right, and so yeah, so you can get some more in there. The one I'm interested in is going to be the rushing props, right? I mean, Connor's 61.5, Kenneth Walker's 52.5, Kyler's 24.5, Geno's 13.5, and then the young running back, Charbonnet and Benson, are 18 and 16.5 each. So is this going to be a game that we see either team kind of try to put an emphasis on the running game, or does both teams, I mean, because you go back to that last game, the Cardinals only ran the ball. That, and I think that was part of the problem that you and I discussed, right? But they only ran the ball 14 times. Now, the Seahawks made a more concerted effort. They had 25 carries to their credit. But neither team hit any. So, none of the running backs or quarterbacks hit their overs. So in that instance, would you look at this as like, is it dangerous to bet the overs, or is this where you're like,
I think that's a course correction. I think that's the most logical thing to expect from at least one of the teams, especially the Cardinals, who rely heavily on the run game. Like you're saying, are they going to completely shut down the Cardinals running game twice?
Yeah, right.
And that just hasn't happened. That just hasn't happened for the Cardinals this year.
No, it hasn't. So that's going to be an interesting one to kind of follow along with. You know, that being said, are you taking over 61.5 for Connor?
You can get over 59.5 on BetMGM, but it's minus 115. So
yeah, I mean, it's the same. It's 114. So yeah, I would go with the slightly, and I use that term loosely, slightly worse odds for, you know, for,
because 2 yards do make a difference when it comes to wins and losses, when it comes to money.
Yep. And so that'll be one to really watch, because I'm just super interested in how this all plays out this week, because that's one of the things that we haven't seen. The other one I'm interested in is, you know, Geno's over 254.5. His passing touchdowns over 1.5 is plus 116. We talked about it again. Geno's been on a bit of a funk lately. His last time he's thrown over 2 touchdowns was that 3 touchdown loss to the Rams. But then before that, it was against San Francisco in week 6. So, I mean, we're talking about a guy that has only thrown over 3 touchdowns 3 times all season. He's got a 13-12 touchdown to interception ratio. And it's not like we're talking about the Cardinals offense, you know, where they're scoring outside of the last couple weeks, that they're scoring touchdowns. It's the Seahawks we talked about last time, like, they can't run the ball unless they're in the red zone. Then once they're in the red zone, they run the ball really, really well. You know, the Cardinals run the ball really well everywhere. They throw the ball well enough everywhere. And so it'll be interesting just to see, because I feel like that's a real low line for a guy that hasn't thrown 2 touchdowns in a long time. And then his interception line is basically even money. It's minus 108. Geno's is, and I feel like he's just been kind of in that funk of throwing bad interceptions. It hasn't cost his team, ironically enough, but it hasn't been great. So that's one I like too, at minus 108. I mean, that's a. I know it's not as juicy of a number, but like, to get that at minus 108, I do like that.
That is a good one. Are there bets from there for multiple interceptions?
No, they don't do that here. So they just have the one interception. They don't have alt interceptions. Yeah. What's interesting is like the alt passing touchdowns, it's not that different. Like Kyler to throw two touchdowns plus 120, Geno's plus 114. Kyler to throw three is only plus 490, Geno's plus 450. They really have like taken the juice out of the market in that sense, because they're just trying to basically tamp down any chances of those things happening. The other one that I do kind of like that I would look at is, and I know it's a long shot, but Zay Jones anytime touchdown score, like him getting a shot play and winning, wasn't that kind of crazy?
That was fun to see. Well, you know, the interesting fact that I saw from PFF, you know what changed last week? And Greg Dortch says, is that they used Michael Wilson in the slot. That what they've been doing, and Greg Dortch's role has diminished a little bit, is that they started using Marv in the slot more. And when they put Marv in the slot, they put Zay at the X. But last week, Wilson had 29 snaps in the slot, which they're not going to use Dortch on the outside much. That means what I think that means is they're trying to give Zay a few more opportunities to get in out there, because he's kind of a do-it-all guy that hasn't done anything yet, which would be nice to see. But plus 750 on BetMGM for any time touchdown would be good. I'm still banking on it. Come on. It's still plus 200 for Trey McBride. That's going to happen some week, and why not this week?
It is wild that the number's that low, right, for a guy that's not scored a touchdown. And I do understand. I mean, it really makes sense that he gets so many touches that you're like, well, it's got to happen eventually. But it's just wild to see that it's that low of a number. It's plus 195 at FanDuel. Like that's just crazy to think that they're still kind of, I don't want to say sheltering that number, but they're still kind of like, we're not going to take that chance.
Because you know that with the volume of touches he gets, you're like, yeah, it's going to happen. The prop bet that it seems like it's an inevitability. James Conner's anytime touchdown scores terrible odds at minus 160. So you know, don't do that. That's not worth anything.
We talked about that last year. Once they start getting in less than minus, unless you're putting them in a parlay just to juice the numbers, but a lot of times that can actually hurt you more than it helps you, because what ends up happening is then you end up having you put in a number like that just to go from, you know, minus 1,000 to minus 1,200, and then that's the one leg that doesn't hit, right?
Of course. Yes, that would be... That would be how that happens. Me and my parlays last year, I would take three like gimme favorites at home on the money line just to create small plus odds. You know how many times I won one of those parlays? Literally never. So I'm done with those. You can't. You know the gimmies are rarely gimmies. Anything else of note in the props? Since I think the Cardinals are more than just cover, I am tempted by taking an alternate spread like at minus 4 or minus 4.5, because you can get plus 120, plus 125 odds on those just to juice up those numbers a little bit for a Cardinals cover.
Yeah, and that's definitely something you can look at if you really think the Cardinals can win this game, right? Like, get those odds a little higher. You know, like you said, that at plus or minus 2.5, it's not great. Minus 4.5 is better. And if you're like me, minus 5.5, that's plus 152. So again, those are better numbers there.
And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise of Syria podcast. Mr. Cardinals Talk of the Web. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Rue. We'll be back again next week, hopefully talking about a Cardinals team that's back on track. We will be back again soon next week. This is episode 621. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, rise up, Sea Red.
Whoa!